My mother helped me with my very first effort at writing. We were living in a duplex in Raleigh on Forest Road, near the new shopping center. Out in California, a 3-year-old girl had fallen down an abandoned well, and I was determined to console her. I was only a few years older than this child, so my mother must have taken dictation. I couldn't begin to tell you what I said. What could I have said? "I'm sorry you fell down a well. Please don't be sad. I hope they get you out soon." What I do remember is how I'd pictured this letter being delivered, someone dropping it directly into the well, like a wishful coin consigned to a fountain, before it drifted down through the clammy darkness into the little girl's outstretched hands. I figured she would be expecting the letter, awaiting my words of comfort. And my words, if I just chose them carefully enough, would save her in the end. I suppose my mother must have heard a mailing address on the radio, one provided by the family. Either that, or she never mailed the letter at all, intending it only as an exercise in empathy, a homemade remedy for her heart-sick, over-imaginative child. The point is, I remember nothing, happy or sad, about the fate of little Kathy Fiscus. A quick Googling reveals her name, and the fact that her attempted rescue in 1949 was one of the first calamities ever to be broadcast live on television. I know now that the well was only 18 inches wide and that the rescuers recovered Kathy's body 100 feet beneath the field where she'd been playing 3 days earlier. The doctor who broke the news to thousands of rapt onlookers said she had died of suffocation only hours after the last time her voice was heard. A haunting detail, but one I don't remember. I would surely have remembered that voice. My mother must have changed the subject as soon as the truth was known, distracting me with a little golden book or an antique store. I enjoyed antiquing at a revealingly early age. My mother spent most of her life withholding things, shielding her children and her husband from uncomfortable truths. I'm sure she must have learned this at the feet of her own mother, an English suffragette who had a few doozies of her own to hide. Still, my mother believed in the curative power of letters. She must have written thousands over the years. When she wasn't at the bargain box selling used clothes for the Junior League or hosting a radio panel show for teenagers, you could hear her writing in her den, clattering away on a millipede of a typewriter that popped out of her desk like a Victorian magic act. I remember the letters she sent me at summer camp and how I reread them daily like a soldier at the front. There were 4 or 5 pages sometimes covering the front and the back, the type inevitably crawling up the margins to a sideways ballpoint finale, "Love, Mummy." That signature was my undoing at camp. Another boy spotted it, and since no kid in his right mind called his mother Mummy, there were immediate taunts about moldy pharaohs and their tombs, complete with bedsheet impersonations. My mother, who called her own mother Mummy, never knew of my humiliation. By the time I was a teenager, I decided to call her Mither, a name that struck me as elegant and ironic, so the joke could not possibly be on me. I did the same thing with my father, who became Pap, after years of being called Daddy, a name only children would use. I was learning to build my manly armor with words, being careful, so careful, like my mother. Her letters were my only balm at Camp Seagull. Those were days of random self-disgrace in the prickly Carolina heat, days of capsized sailboats and fumbled baseballs and arrows landing short of their mark. There was one other kid who felt like a friend, another miserable ectomorph, but he bunked in another cabin, so our time together was limited. Sometimes we would meet up at twilight to walk along the shore of the Neuse River, away from our torturers, swapping notes on the universe as we poked in the sand for shark's teeth. What was his name, goddammit? He looked me up in San Francisco in the early 80s when a few published novels and a listed phone number made me easy to find. He told me he was gay, like me, but not very good at it. He liked my books, he said. He seemed so profoundly sad. I'm wondering if he ever made it past the plague, or if he lives with the virus, or if he died in one of the other ways, or if he's on Facebook right now, like so many people I never expected to hear from again, posting videos of cute interspecies friendships.